Bart, let's move on to 2030 for a moment. What's happening in that time period to all of us?
That's a great question. There's been a lot of work on extrapolating oil, on computer chips that we talked about. How far out in the future can we look on those fronts? And the year 2030, a lot of the experts see great problems with our current oil consumption, with the effects of computer chips going the way that they go. So it's my prediction, George, in the fact-based novel Nanotime, that around that time you potentially could have a World War III. I was intrigued by what a World War III would look like, and I want to tell you something now on the air that I've never mentioned in the many press interviews I've done about Nanotime. The years have passed since its genesis, but how that book came to be. I was fishing in the Sierras, and when classes were out about this time, and came back and had a voicemail, my voicemail machine, from the film director Oliver Stone, and who I know through other channels.
Sure.
And Oliver was interested in coming up with a movie that would compete with Stanley Kubrick's then movie, AI. Of course, it came out later by Steven Spielberg, produced by Stanley Kubrick.
Mm-hmm.
And Oliver said, take a shot at it. Give me something. You're my machine intelligence friend. Give me something big. So I went back fishing, and I thought about that, and I thought, well, the biggest event in the 20th century, this was towards the end of the 20th century, was World War II, and arguably that was the biggest event in history. And the big event in the next century will likely be a World War III. And then I began the research of what that might look like in terms of how far we could plausibly extrapolate. And I haven't seen much from the CIA to Israeli intelligence and many other folks that could go beyond the year 2030. And in particular, I wanted to explore the concept that I've been looking at for years and based on my earlier years in the defense industry of what I call a smart war, where we release our smart weapons against theirs. And what that kind of thing would look like in a highly globalized multimedia world of the near future. And that's the novel Nanotime, or the premise behind it. A time when oil as the energy of choice, source of choice, is running out. There's about a trillion barrels left now, depending on how you count them, and we're burning well beyond 25 billion barrels a year. And it isn't clear whether we'll shift to hydrogen directly or come up with synthetic nano-based fossil fuel type devices, nano-alkanes. A lot of people are looking at that. But it does suggest, George, that the power structure in the Middle East will change, where the great bulk of the easy access oil still lies, really under the Arabian Peninsula. And for example, if you just transitioned from oil to water, for example, in a hydrogen economy, think of the turbulence that would cause in that hotbed of political activity.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I don't think it's that far-fetched. It's certainly a speculative hypothesis. And we'll never, I want to make clear, we're never going to run out of oil. It's just at some point it will not be as economically viable as alternatives.
To pull it out, I've always believed, Bart, not to change your pattern here, but I'm not so sure oil is a fossil fuel. I'm beginning to wonder if it's a part of the planet. It seems to be regenerating itself in certain areas around this planet. It's just weird. This whole thing is weird. I like you, don't think we're going to run out. I'm just wondering now if we have enough to sustain ourselves for 100,000 years. I hope we get away from it, quite honestly. But I'm beginning to think that maybe it was part of the formation of the planet. Do you ever think about that?
Yeah, I think there's pretty good evidence, George, that it comes from decaying carbon matter, organic matter. And we're talking about, in the chemist terms, alkanes here, octane, for example, that sort of thing. So I think the first order, we can work with a hydrocarbon model. And even if we didn't run out, as we burn more of this, we really do have a kind of market failure effect here, where we impose third-party costs, not just on each other, but really on the whole environment. Obviously, global warming is one example of that, but a variety of other types of pollution. And it's not at all clear if that's a serious problem, as many people think, or if it is, how one would address that. But those third-party costs, even if you have plenty of oil, are a big enough concern, I think, to lead to alternatives. But I think there's no great consensus that we could have another 100 years like we've had with oil, that we're looking more like 20 or 30, if even that, in terms of the current structure of the economy. And when that changes, the whole power structure, the global economy, the global political structure, I think will change as well. And it's not at all clear. A little country, for example, like Israel, which has no oil but has great, great intellectual assets, wonderful scientific institutes, is doing great research in these subjects. It may find itself, in effect, in the position of Saudi Arabia in terms of that new economy. And that has great potential for conflict. And the other concern here, George, as we all know, especially since 9/11, is that the Muslim religion is, Islam is the fastest growing religion, and it has that radical element in it. It's obviously not the whole religion, but we're talking a billion people here. And so even a small percentage of that who condone or participate in suicide bombings, that sort of thing, are a real problem. And you combine that with the faster, cheaper, better weapons becoming available, you get a point of concern. If I can just call something to your attention, I saw recently on CNN, it's one of those little throwaway moments that got very little attention, but it was some video footage someone took, I believe right at near, not Tel Aviv, but in northern Israel, and what it was a UAV, an unmanned aerial vehicle, from the terrorist group Hezbollah. Now you think about that for a minute. This was a small drone,
yes,
apparently it was the second time it's been done,
yeah, exactly.
Flown right over Israeli civilian centers that could have been crashed at will, really wherever they want.
That's true.
And that is a kind of a cruise missile, and the very premise behind the novel Nanotime, World War III, that the cruise missile is the weapon of choice in a smart war, very much as now a nanotube is the device of choice in nanotechnology. That may change in the future. And it's something that flies low. It's almost impossible to shoot down. It's often described as trying to hit a bullet with a bullet. And the cost just keeps falling. And we sell these to Britain, and only to Britain so far, at about $1 million per pop, but they really cost about a tenth of that, about $100,000. And as a practical matter, you can make an improvised device probably more on the order of $10,000. And that will only increase, and it isn't that far away, George, when really every country and terrorist organization may have stockpiles of these things.
Well, I know, and that's scary.
Right, and here we get a new principle. That in a smart war, unlike the traditional wars of the past, which have been based on atoms rather than bits, here it becomes cheaper to attack than to defend. It's always been more difficult to attack than defend in the past. It took 1,000 ships to invade Troy, for example. It's a very expensive thing to set up a siege, but it's trivial comparatively to attack with an information device. And computer viruses are another example of that principle at work. And as we know, those are only increasing. But much beyond that, the ability to launch something that you can't do much about, it can do surveillance, pinpoint strikes. I mean, if you think about it, 9/11 was really an improvised cruise missile attack.